Welcome. I'm Leslie Canham.
I'm Mary Gavoni.
I'm Linda Harvey.
I'm Olivia Wan, and together we are the Compliance Divas.
Welcome to the Compliance Divas podcast. My name is Mary Gavoni, and I will be your moderator for this episode. We have some relatively late-breaking news that we need to discuss today, and that is about the end of the national emergency related to COVID-19. The Compliance Divas bring clarity and simplicity to compliance by navigating the regulatory world to keep you on course. You can subscribe to the Compliance Divas podcast through your favorite podcast channel or on our website, thecompliancedivas.com. All the resources we mention during this episode can be found on the ComplianceDivas.com website and the show notes for the podcast. And you may anytime submit questions to the Compliance Divas at support@thecompliancedivas.com. On January 31st, President Biden announced that the declaration of public health emergency in the U.S. will end on May 11th of this year. So what is exactly does that mean for us? Does it mean the pandemic is over? And that is what the declaration is saying, that we believe that the widespread of COVID cases at high numbers has reached a level where it's no longer a national emergency or a pandemic in this country. However, that can always change again. And the other question that we have is, will this change the CDC and OSHA guidance for COVID-19, which we anticipate, but we don't exactly know yet. So I'm going to call on Leslie to share with us what effect this declaration or removal of this declaration might have on patient screening, PPE, and other CDC interim guidance for COVID-19.
Well, Mary, I think that we're going to see the CDC guidance change slightly, but I believe we'll still be required to screen patients. And the guidance that's in place from September of 2022 for dental practices, as well as for other healthcare settings, is that they recommend that everyone stay up to date with vaccinations and that every healthcare facility establish a process to identify and manage individuals with suspected or confirmed SARS-CoV-2. And that includes screening, putting a visual alert up within the location of the area where your patients may come into your practice. And when it comes to site specific for us in dentistry, as the CDC guidelines cover all healthcare settings, we have a certain set of guidance that CDC has provided to us. One is that we stay closely connected with the public health department and our state dental board to see if there's anything specific that's going to change for us. And then they also give us some instructions when it comes to what we do with patients who may have suspected or confirmed SARS-CoV-2, suggesting that we postpone all non-urgent treatment. That will likely stay the same. Now, in California, we have an aerosol transmissible disease standard, which says that we can't provide care for patients who are infected with an aerosol transmissible disease. And that SARS-CoV-2 is included as it has actually been something that is not on the original list. SARS, severe acute respiratory syndrome, was on the original list, but not on the current list. It's assumed that the COVID-19 will continue to remain an aerosol transmissible disease. Also, when it comes to recommendations for PPE, there's no changes today about when performing aerosol generating procedures on a patient who's not suspected or confirmed to have SARS-CoV-2, ensure that dental workers are wearing the recommended PPE, including an N95 respirator, which is, of course, NIOSH approved, and whenever they're in a county with a higher level of transmission, and then use other mitigation strategies, high evacuation, dental dams, and four-handed dentistry to minimize droplets and spatters. And then something else is that was included specifically for us in dentistry was that we should try to have dental treatment in treatment rooms where it's individual rooms where possible. Now, they recognize at CDC that we have open bay style seating, and we also have reception areas. So they're asking us to keep track of how our ventilation is working, and to maybe just in concert with our HVAC expert to make sure that we do everything we can to improve ventilation. So that's the CDC guidelines in a summary view of what is now. And I don't anticipate that those guidelines are going to change for dentistry, as they've been kind of consistent throughout the whole pandemic as science and the data come in.
Thanks, Leslie. I totally agree with you. I think there are many folks working in dentistry out there that are saying, yippee, it's done. We can go back to the old ways before COVID. And that's not necessarily true. And I think, Leslie, you have some information that will help support that.
Mary, I know we would all like COVID to just disappear, but according to APIC, the Association for Professionals in Infection Control and Epidemiology, they provide some very interesting insight on this. And their insight is that COVID-19 will likely become a more normal part of our lives, like influenza and other respiratory viruses. It's going to become what is, most people are hearing the word endemic. And the definition of endemic is constant presence or unusual prevalence of a disease or an infectious agent in a population within a geographic area. And an example of that would be, well, prior to COVID-19, you know, pre-2020, human coronaviruses regularly cause colds in winter months in the United States. Another good example of that would be, for example, chickenpox or flu. Flu influenza is endemic, except for when we had our swine flu, it was elevated to pandemic levels. So Mary, it's likely going to be with us. And I know the other part of this question that you have is, what are we going to do differently if there's a disease like COVID-19 and it is endemic? And the steps that we've been hearing all along, there's important communication surrounding how to better control a disease. And when you can control a disease, you have the ability to reduce the spread. And that's also part of the definition of endemic, is controlling the spread and have the ability to reduce it. And the steps that community members, healthcare professionals, everybody can take, back to good old hand hygiene, respiratory hygiene, covering coughs, you know, that sort of thing, getting vaccinated, keeping your environment clean, regular disinfecting of surfaces, stay home if you're sick, that's for sure. And remember that an endemic disease can get worse, and there is a risk of future COVID-19 infections increasing, and it might require additional measures for minimizing the impact on the greater community. So when this happens, when there's a periodic increase within a community, it's referred to as an outbreak. And the circumstances that could lead to an outbreak include a new variant, which we've seen many, an increased transmission to related to a large indoor event or many smaller events like an indoor holiday celebration, and even low vaccination update in a community. So if an outbreak begins to expand, results in high levels of COVID spread, the community may enter what's called a new epidemic.
Thanks, Leslie. That really makes it easy for us to understand. Olivia, can we just go kind of back to some basics here and talk about what exactly was the declaration of public health emergency? When did it take place? And what does the end sort of mean for us?
Sure, Mary. The Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services may, under Section 319 of the Public Health Services Act, authorized to take about 18 different actions when one of two things occur. The first is determine that a disease or disorder presents a public health emergency, or that a public health emergency, including significant outbreaks of infectious disease or bioterrorist attacks, otherwise exists. Now, Mary, as far as duration and notification, the declaration lasts for the duration of the emergency or 90 days, but it may be extended by the secretary. Congress must be notified of the declaration within 48 hours, and relevant agencies, including the Department of Homeland Security, Department of Justice, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, must also be informed. And Mary, prior to issuing the declaration, the secretary should consult with public health officials as necessary. The public health emergency was initially declared by the Department of Health and Human Services in late 2020, which is about 3 years ago now, Mary.
So that's quite unprecedented that this public health emergency has gone on for so long. It feels like almost a previous life back to the days before this happened. So Linda, can you go over with us what types of programs or services will be affected when this declaration ends?
Sure, Mary. As Olivia was saying, this public health emergency notice authorizes Department of Health and Human Services to take about 18 different actions. And so instead of going through all of those, I thought I would just mention two that would be the most relevant to our listeners in dentistry. First is that HHS can waive or modify certain Medicare, Medicaid, and Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIP, as well as the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act privacy requirements. So we might think, well, most dentists aren't Medicare and Medicaid or participate in CHIP, but there are quite a few that do, and that number with Medicare is growing. So that's why, especially with the HIPAA piece, that's why it was not a violation, Mary, to speak to or report a COVID case to the local health department. In the past, you know, dental offices would be very reluctant to share any patient information outside the realm of treatment, payment, and health cooperations, but there was more relaxed standards during this crisis. Another action that HHS can take is to modify the practice of telemedicine. Our listeners may recall that HHS issued a bulletin back in 2020, actually several bulletins, Mary, that allowed medical and dental practitioners to use a non-HIPAA compliant communication platform in order to provide medical or dental care, as long as those platforms were not public-facing applications, such as Facebook Live. But for this interim period, medical and dental practitioners have been able to use Zoom, Skype, Apple FaceTime, Google Hangouts, and Facebook Messenger. And we've also been allowed to use some of the non-HIPAA compliant text programs such as Signal, Jabber, Facebook Messenger, Google Hangouts, WhatsApp, and iMessage. These programs are familiar to all of us, whether we're in healthcare or not. And so during this crisis, we've been able to use these non-HIPAA compliant programs. And of course, that sets a precedence. Now we have to turn around and come back and kind of pivot when this declaration ends. Because once it's over, once the public health emergency is over, Mary, all practitioners must use a HIPAA-compliant teledentistry program, as well as a HIPAA-compliant text messaging program. And these are not free. This is something that needs to be added to the budget, Mary, because we see that, you know, using something simple on your phone is easy, you're already paying for that service. But in other words, this is not compliant and could be open a practice to fines or HIPAA compliance. So in other words, it would not be acceptable to simply FaceTime a parent to determine the extent of their child's injury or toothache once this PHE is over, Mary. So throughout, we've gone through so many different phases, Mary, you know, with COVID, why haven't we? Vaccines, the travel restrictions, the boosters, the various COVID variants. So it's been 3 years of a lot of ups and downs. And now we're on the cusp of moving into our next new normal, but it's not going to be the way it was before COVID, Mary.
Great point, Linda. It will not be the same as before COVID. And one thing that may affect our listeners personally is that vaccines may no longer be free after the declaration of emergency ends. And testing may no longer be free. And I think some areas are already experiencing that where their healthcare benefit plan is taking care of those costs rather than it just being free from the federal government. As we've discussed throughout this podcast, it's important to remember that dental healthcare workers first have to follow the current CDC guidance until the declaration ends and the CDC determines that the measures that they have recommended as interim measures are no longer necessary. However, we also need to be prepared, as we've said in the podcast, Linda, you said it so well, that things may not go back to the way that they were pre-COVID. In other words, we may still be wearing high levels of respiratory protection, as in an N95 respirator for aerosol generating procedures, because COVID will still be around, it may still be spreading, and we have other respiratory disease risks that have been really highlighted, I think, during this COVID-19 pandemic. So we want to thank our listeners for participating with us. And please let us know if you have any questions. You may submit them to support@thecompliancedivas.com. As a reminder, we bring clarity and simplicity to regulatory compliance by navigating the regulatory world to keep you on course. All of our resources will be listed in the show notes for your podcast and are on the Compliance Divas website, thecompliancedivas.com. Thanks for joining us.